Yay, podcast night!
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for very important people, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, I will try oh so very hard not to make all the Warren Zevon jokes as the podcast crew takes a look at Rivers of London. There's a DC rebirth on the horizon. Some big movie broke this weekend. I don't know what it was. It was something with a thing and a guy and a Batman. And even teen spoilers can't save us from all the sharp-edged kick-butt poll of the week, plus our usual slate of awesome reviews in the stately spoilers manner, and much, much more. So grab your menu and order pina coladas from Trader Vic's, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
You couldn't even make it out of the intro. Welcome.
I said I'd try.
Welcome to the Major Spoilers podcast, issue 670. This week we're taking a look at Rivers of London. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But first, let us get to the news. DC Rebirth was officially unveiled this weekend at WonderCon. Batman v Superman brings in $166 million on opening weekend. And Fooly Cooly is returning for two new seasons on the Cartoon Network. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let's see where we land.
Oh boy, I know which one I want.
That's Fooly Cooly, yeah.
What's a Fooly Cooly?
We'll have that conversation another time. Oh, there it is, DC Rebirth. Like you guys didn't know. Like you guys didn't know from last week when I said, oh, I guess next week we'll be talking about DC Rebirth.
Yeah, you couldn't even get out of the intro. That's one. Oh, no, wait. No, that's something different. My bad.
DC had their big unveiling this weekend at WonderCon. They had a huge streaming event, and over 10,000 people watched, including yours truly. I don't know if you guys watched it. Ashley, you were there.
I was. You could definitely see the back of my head.
Oh, really? I wasn't looking, because it seemed like there was such a huge distance
Right front and center is me and Mr. Jason Inman.
Oh, okay. Because it just seemed like there was such a far distance from the stage to the audience. I was afraid that maybe they were worried people were going to rush the stage or something. And Diane Nelson was also there, which I found very interesting. She's the president of DC Entertainment.
She was sitting beside us.
Oh, that's so nice. I like that she showed up because, you know, most people would think of Diane Nelson, even though she's president of everything DC Entertainment, would think that she's mostly focused on the television and movie stuff. But to see her show up and show her support for this, I thought was really, really nice. Tiffany Smith hosted the panel along with Dan DiDio, Jim Lee, and Jeff Johns. And then they rolled out all of their new titles that are coming out in the upcoming months, as well as the creators came out on stage for most of the titles. I guess there's still a couple of them that they haven't finalized yet. And some of them, I guess, changed at the last minute. But a couple of things that I took away from this that I thought was kind of an interesting thing. First of all, Dan DiDio came out, and as he was talking about what Rebirth is, he said something along the lines of, somewhere along the way, we lost our way, which I thought was a huge, it wasn't really a mea culpa, but it was really, really kind of saying, we kind of maybe went a little bit too far, guys, and now we need to bring it back.
That's an interesting admission. I mean, that's not necessarily
that was
something
like his
I would
first
expect.
Thing that he said when he came out. Even Jim Lee says, said that they went a little bit too far on the new 52 costumes. And so they're dialing those back a bit for Rebirth. And if anyone has seen the fantastic new Supergirl costume and the art for that, wow, they are totally
bringing
back. You
mean the one straight out of the TV show?
Yeah, really. It looks awesome. Looks awesome. And then the other big thing,
synergy.
Other big thing that I really got a kick of was that all their comics are going to be $2.99 again.
Yeah.
But here's
Which
the thing.
Which is nice.
Here's the thing, Matthew. I don't think they're going to start working in, or at least in the post-press conference stuff and some other things have been said. It looks like it's $2.99 period, because DC Rebirth, which arrives on May 25th, is an 80-page one-shot, $2.99.
Wow. That's commitment. That's
impressive.
That is
some commitment. And if they stay that way, I mean, if those of you remember the last time that DC did this $2.99, holding the line at $2.99, it was kind of like, yeah, but we have some books. We have some books that'll have 8 extra pages, so that'll be a little bit more. And then if you want digital code, it'll be a little bit more. And so pretty soon they were back up to $3.99 and $4.99 books all over the place. But I'm hoping when they say $2.99, they mean $2.99 across the board. The other thing that they, I mean, they've kind of confirmed this before, but DC will have 17 twice-monthly books and 14 monthly books once this thing gets all up to speed. So those were some of the big takeaways that I got from this. Ashley, what were some of the biggest things that you took away from this DC Rebirth announcement? Besides the cool poster signed by Jim Lee.
Yeah. It's a litho. So it's not, it's cool, but it's not like I got a page of Jim Lee art or anything. The main thing that I took away from it was that it's not an apology for the New 52. Everyone was very clear about it. But the thing that really stuck with me, and I hate to harp on it, is that, boy, there sure were only 5 women on stage.
Yeah, that was somewhat of a shame.
But I have to say that I think, like, the stories and the idea of the world that they're trying to bring the New 52 and the pre-New 52 together, I think it's a very attractive idea. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are all now hedging our bets on exactly which of our favorite characters are coming back.
Well, we do know some of them are coming back because they did say in Detective Comics that we were going to get Cassandra Cain, Tim Drake, and Spoiler all together again, which I was super excited about. They also, Rodrigo, said that there's a Blue Beetles series that will feature both Jaime Reyes and Ted Kord together.
Interesting.
Yeah. What were some other announcements, Rodrigo, that you got a kick out of?
Actually, interestingly, that was kind of my takeaway from this, is that, hey, you know all those guys you like? Everybody's going to be in a comic.
Yeah.
You like one Blue Beetle or the other? Well, now they're both in their own comic. You like any random Batman character? Now they're all in a comic. Like, this... A lot of these announcements really felt like we're just going to do everything. We're going to do every last thing. We're going to give you 2 Green Lanterns of color.
Mm-hmm. Anything
so
else?
Stop yelling at us.
Oh, okay. Yes. and even though, as you said, Ashley, there were not a lot of female creators announced on this, which was somewhat of a shame and a shock, because I was expecting Gail Simone to pop up somewhere in here, especially when they've got Batgirl and the Birds of Prey coming back in August.
I think the Bensons were a much bigger get because they're big TV people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. They do have them working on that. Amanda, who am I thinking of? Connor. She was signed exclusively to DC as an artist. So we'll be getting a lot of Power Girl, Harley Quinn stuff out of her. Jean Yang will be writing The Superman. Matthew, what the heck is The Superman?
Boy, you got me. I think it's Lex Luthor.
No, it's not. Actually, it's Super Hyphen Man.
Right.
By Kanji Khan.
Yes, Kanji Khan. He's a Chinese guy who is infused with Superman's power that affect him both physically and in his heart. And so we get to see Superman viewed through the context of Chinese culture, which will be interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Superwoman with Phil Jimenez is coming in. We've got Greg Rucka coming back to write Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the interesting thing that I found out about Wonder Woman that I think is really interesting, especially for people that are concerned about the twice monthly books. I don't know if they're doing this for a bunch of the twice monthly books, but for sure with Wonder Woman, the even number of books will be telling one story. The odd number of books will be telling a different story. So if you're not liking one story, maybe you like the other and you just have to get the alternating issues.
What if you don't like either? No, that's rude.
Well, some people may not. We're also going to find out.
Are they going to?
Well, it's like right now when you don't read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're gonna be titled differently, right? So
it's going to be the same Wonder Woman book. It's the same Wonder Woman book. It's not like Wonder Woman in Action Comics and Wonder Woman Man of Steel. It's not like that. It's Wonder Woman 951 will be the odd number, and that will tell the, it'll be 951, 953, 955 will tell one storyline, and 952, 954, 956 will tell the other storyline.
That is weird.
There's a way, there's a way to fix that. There's an easy way to solve that. They did that back in the 90s where they put the little sigil on the cover of the Superman comics so you knew what order to read the comics in.
All right, everybody. Steven mentioned numbers on the cover. Everybody drink.
Speaking of numbers on the cover, Ashley, good idea, bad idea that they're returning all the books to their original numberings with Detective, Action Comics, Wonder Woman, etc.?
They're not, I don't think they're returning all of them to the original numbers, because I know that Batman number one is going to be only the third Batman number one that has ever been published, which is kind
Wonder
of a cool
Woman
thing.
Wonder Woman is getting a number one, too.
I think it's only Action and
only
Detective.
Oh, only Action Comics and Detective. Okay.
And Detective,
and I do think that for those two properties, given their legacy and their importance in the DC Comics pantheon, I think it's cool, man. I mean, we all want to write, like, I want to write Detective Comics 1000, so let's head towards that.
I think
renumbering those two books was a mistake.
Oh, and you started them back to number ones?
Just restarting, restarting the numbering on Action Comics was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the old numbering, it's going to be one of those things. It's always going to have an asterisk. It's like Captain America 600, which isn't actually Captain America 600 because it counts 100 issues of the book that didn't actually have any Captain America in it. Action Comics 958 is technically not going to be Action Comics 958.
Are they
a
picking
part of my brain that just kind of goes missed opportunity.
Are they picking that up, Matthew, right from the end of the last issue, or are they adding 52 issues onto that from the 52 Action Comic issues that we had before?
Well, they have to. Action Comics ended with 909 or something like that. Uh-huh. So, yes.
Okay.
They
so
are counting Volume 2's numbers in there and then restarting.
Okay. All right. I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. The other interesting thing, and I don't know how closely everyone follows the solicitations over at MajorSpoilers.com, but the solicitations went up Monday afternoon. We got them up just in time. And then this morning, DC said, oh, hey, all those Justice League number 52 solicitations that we sent out, you need to change those, which doesn't even have the same creative team on it, which I found interesting. So things are changing at the last minute. In fact, something else that people may or may not care about, in Justice League number 50, we will find the true name of the Joker. How exciting is that, everybody?
No, we won't.
Crickets.
That's one of those things, though. They've made such a big deal about never revealing it over the years that revealing it only feels like a big deal.
Right.
It's like that moment where Bucky came back. It's like, oh, my God, they said they'd never do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately they're like, holy crap, scrambling to find something to do with Bucky now that he's back from the dead.
Oh, so get me started on people back from the dead.
Well, this is the thing. If the Joker's name is significant and meaningful and leads to a story where it changes, you know, things or gives us even just 2 years of something cool. If, say, the Joker's name is Thomas Wayne Jr. or if the Joker's name is, Clark Kent, only the first one who drowned when he was a little boy. And then the Kents went out and adopted an alien baby that they found under a rock. You know, something like that could make for an interesting story. So I'm not going to say that that's immediately a stupid idea, but I think that it's one of those things where we're so focused on that moment of this story's never been told before. The answer of, and why do you think that is? No one's
question. That goes back to that thing, Matthew, for you is it's answering a question nobody's ever asked.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure people have asked Joker's it, but it's not relevant. Well, here's what I hope that happens.
To be relevant, and they have to find something to tell with it.
Yeah, here's what I hope that happens is Batman sitting on Metron's chair, and he asks, "Who killed my parents?" Ping, Joe Chill. What's the Joker's name? Ping. We find out the name, and Batman's like, "I have no idea who that is." That's what I want to have happen. Who is this?
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
It's Barry Smith. That's who I hope it is.
Yeah, Barry Steven Smith. Schleicher.
Steven Schleicher. That'd be funny as hell.
He drew Conan back in the 70s, Barry Smith.
Were there any other announcements from DC Rebirth that you guys wanted to talk about or mention either as good or bad or whatever? Let's start with Ashley.
Yeah, it's so much pressure because it feels like it was about 100,000 years ago.
I know,
for
right?
me. I mean, the coolest thing for me is Nightwing and mm-hmm. Nightwing being blue again, because Grayson is a really great series. It's so much better than it has any right to be, but it's about damn time that he's back.
And I guess there was a big argument between Nightwing Blue or Nightwing Red, and they decided that they learned their lesson from Superman Blue and Red, that they didn't want to repeat that.
I don't think it was an argument.
That's how Dan DiDio kind of Dan DiDio painted it, was that they were arguing over blue or red. So.
Yeah.
Matthew, any other things that you want to bring up about Rebirth?
Well, I do like the fact that characters who aren't top tier, like Superman makes a quadrillion dollars in the theater, guys are still going to have books. So you're still going to see Hellblazer. You're still going to see Cyborg. You're still going to see the Titans are back. So I'm interested in seeing where that goes and what that's mm-hmm. going to do, even if it is drawn by Brett Booth, who I'm not a fan of Brett Booth. But, you know, it's one of those things where there have been so many people saying that DC is screwed up and made terrible mistakes and huge, big, giant missteps. And I don't necessarily agree, but I do agree that tonally things may have gone to a place that I'm not happy with. And I like the fact that they're addressing complaints from fans who say things like that. And they're at least willing to look and see, okay, well, let's see what we can do. We'll do something else. We'll have your green Beast Boy back and your blue Nightwing, and the Teen Titans really do exist. And then we'll tell all these cool stories. And I have hope for this. I have hope for this more than I did when they announced the new 52, because I feel like the new 52, this announcement comparatively to new 52, at least, you know, 5 years down the line, the way my memory works, it feels like there's less hubris involved in this. There's less, we're going to fix everything that's gone wrong with DC in the last 70 years, to we're going to do these cool stories and maybe try to honor the things that went down in the last 70 years, which I'm a lot happier with, given the sheer number of stories and characters and creators involved that, you know, in those previous 70 years did stuff that immediately got either overturned or retconned or rebooted, and Ted Kord exists again, so I'm happy.
Yeah. Rodrigo?
I mean, I'm interested in, you know, some Beatles stuff. Also, I'm interested to see what they do with, you know, team books, mostly Birds mm-hmm. of Prey, Justice League, stuff like that. And, you know, if they're actually going to knock it in a different direction, it's always, you know, good to give it a chance.
I'll be interested to see what they mean by we're going to make it's a course adjustment. That's the thing that I'm most mm-hmm. interested in, is what do they mean by course adjustment?
They mean it's not a reboot.
Yeah, it's not a reboot. Well, that's what Jeff Jones has said from the beginning.
I kind of hope that it means a little less grim, dark murder death.
Maybe.
The thing about DC,
which is interesting, given that grim, dark murder death, the movie just raked in a quadrillion dollars at the box office.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. The thing about DC is basically over the last 25 years, where goeth the Batman, there goeth DC Comics. And I feel like there has
been. Tell me how you really feel.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that's a bad thing either. I'm just saying that Batman has been the bellwether of the way DC works. And Batman the last 2 years has actually been less grimdark murder death than we've seen in the previous 20. I mean, there is less of a must climb higher blood flooding chest cavity and more of an actual focus on things that I'm happier to see. So if that kind of floods out into the rest of the line and we see a little bit less of the, I don't know if you guys have been reading the just plain Justice League title.
Nope.
Which is, nope. It's basically the Ultimates with Superman drawn over Captain America is what it is. And it's not particularly fun for me because everything is the greatest threat we've ever had. Oh, and we're all going to die. You know, that the Justice League book where they murdered Lois Lane in the beginning and now Superman has taken over the world. It's like 5 years in and they're still putting this thing out every month.
Oh, that is, yeah.
What is that thing? I don't know.
Injustice?
Yeah, Injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Dark, grim, dark murder death.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping from the
that's a video game tie-in. That's where that's all going.
That's why
the new
that's
one
going.
Is like coming out soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The I feel like they may be, and you know, maybe hopefully the whole maybe we've lost our way comment was a reference to the fact that it can't all, you know, it can't rain all the time.
Right.
That's,
well, hopefully
it's not a DC comic, but what are you going to do?
Hopefully it doesn't, you know, some people were like, oh, this means that they're getting rid of all the cool comics like Gotham Academy and Batgirl and stuff. So Gotham Academy.
They sure are not.
They are sure are not. Gotham Academy is continuing. Earth 2 is continuing. Dan DiDio did say that, hey, because they weren't announced in this, it just means that they're not part of Rebirth. They're continuing to do what they're going to do. Hope Larson will be on Batgirl. Raphael Albuquerque, whose art I love, will be doing the art on that. Batgirl will be leaving Burnside, though, and she'll be taking a backpacking trip to Asia.
Oh, cool.
But the costume and everything stays, so don't look for that a huge change, at least in the preview art that they showed. All the solicitations are up now over at majorspoilers.com. You can go find them. It's for all the books coming in June, even though DC Rebirth kicks off on May 25th, 80-page special, $2.99, written by Jeff Johns, art by a whole bunch of people on this piece. And then following that the next week, June 1st, all the Rebirth titles kick off. You'll have Superman Rebirth, Superman. A lot of these will have a Superman or a Rebirth title to go with it. So Flash, Green Arrow, Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, all will have a Rebirth issue that comes out. And then they'll get into their either new number ones or continuing on with the old numbering. So be on the lookout for that. And if you're looking for a catalog, if you need a catalog to flip through this, that catalog will, I believe it's free at your local comic store arriving April 13th. So you can go check that out then, or else you can head online. It's all over the place right now of some cool things coming up, potentially.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter?
They're collecting the Paul Kupperberg Daring Adventures of Supergirl from 1981-82.
It's interesting. The other thing that I notice about solicitations is if you pay attention, if you pay close attention to what they're collecting, oftentimes that gives you a hint of what is coming up.
But or that series was awful.
I'm just saying it's often an indicator of what they have the hopper.
You want to know how bad this book is? I have a complete run and I love it. That should tell you all you need to know.
There you go. Hey, there's some other big news that happened over the weekend that, as far as I know, most of the sites did not report on. We got it because we know somebody. We know Matt Hawkins, yes. Ashley Victoria Robinson has a new job.
I do.
Working for Top Cow as assistant or associate editor?
Assistant editor.
Assistant editor. Congratulations.
AD editor. Thank you.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right? They just don't put you into senior editor position, right? No comic book publisher, DC, would ever do that.
If they wanted to and bump my pay, I'm sure I could figure it out.
So what are your job duties now at Top Cow?
Learning how to be an assistant editor.
Oh, awesome. That's great.
That's currently, it's mostly making the schedule.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We've kind of known about this for a couple of weeks now.
Yes.
Which is really cool, but also very hard to not talk about. But also, this is one of those things where it is helpful to pay attention to some of the quote unquote news articles that people don't care about, because Top Cow had sent out something. Matt had sent something out several months ago. I want to say maybe November, basically saying, hey, we're looking to hire people. If you know people, pass it along. Here's my contact information. Contact us. And so Ashley had that information. Contacted and boom, there you go. So pay attention to those kinds of things. There's a DC Writers Workshop. I don't know too much about it right now.
Don't tell people about it because I want to get into that.
Oh, okay. All right. Then never mind. Don't look up DC Writers Workshop. Don't wait until the end of May to submit, because by then it'll be too late. But
submit right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You actually can't submit right now. I think the submission process doesn't open until May 1st. But, you know, these kinds of things, if you're looking for ways to get into the industry, look and see what jobs are open at companies. Pay attention to these quote unquote business things that pop up on sites, even though it may be a press release. It may be your key to getting into the comic book industry. So Ashley, big congratulations to you.
Thank you. And actually, I was going to add to that. I got the Top Cow gig because I already knew Matt Hawkins because I did their talent hunt 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So,
and you've written a couple of issues for them. So that helped.
I have, but those things pay off. They're, even if you're one of 800 people or everybody on Earth, as will be the case with DC, it is definitely worth. If you want to have to just, you know, stick your foot in the door. It's a good way to do it.
Yes. And Rodrigo, if you go and read those things, they're not looking for people who have done, if you've had some comic book work previously, that helps, but they're looking for people who have published work. Rodrigo Lopez, Tale of Tallest Rabbit, now available over at Amazon.com. And if you want to buy that book, if you haven't bought that book, buy that book. And if you're going to buy the book, use that Amazon link over at majorspoilers.com and buy it. It's a very good book. It's there in hardcover or Kindle electronic edition if you want to get it that way. What else, Rodrigo, do people need to know about this book?
It's super cute. Kids will love it. My nephew just finished reading it, and he pitched me a sequel.
Awesome.
Yes.
It's you guys ready for this? This is what my nephew actually told me this in a conversation. He's like, you should do a sequel, and it should be called Second Tallest Rabbit, which is amazing. It's just so amazing. I might just do it just because of that title.
I think you should probably just do it, right?
Yep.
Yep, because I got to keep getting the books out there so you can get even more people noticing your stuff. So go check it out over at Amazon.com, Tale of Tallest Rabbit by Rodrigo Lopez. All right, news is out of the way. Cool announcements are out of the way. Let us get to some reviews. So this week I took a look at Conan the Avenger number 24. This is where he, Tony Stark, Black Cat, and Scarlet Witch all team up to go take on Doc Ock. It says Conan the Avenger, Matthew.
So he's got to be in the Avengers. Really an Avenger?
No, not really. I don't know what he's doing here. He's trying to.
I think he's a new Avenger.
He's a new Avenger. He's the ultimate Avenger.
Yeah.
This is from Dark Horse Comics. I'm just kidding on the Marvel thing in case people are really flipping out. Written by Fred Van Lente, art by Brian Ching, which I think I kind of said the art was just so-so last time. This time, for whatever reason, I really got into it. It's super caricature. I think I maybe mentioned that the last time when I read the previous issue. But here it just kind of worked really well because you have, in the previous issue, it was a lot of stuff of male warriors in the desert type stuff. So everyone was kind of proportioned the exact same. Here you're seeing the queen who has thrown her sister, who the real queen, into jail and is, you know, just doing horrific things to the people in and around the area. You see her offset against her giant bodyguard, which is built like, you know, like a 7 foot wide and 12 feet tall, you know, brick. Compared that to her vizier and her lead warrior, who are also differently proportioned. And then you have Conan and his 10,000 people that he has storming the gates of the city. And it's just really interesting and weird to see them all offset like this. So Conan and his army that he was building last time are laying siege to the city. Inside some, rebels have found out that the queen is still alive. And they know that while the city is being laid siege to, that all the army will be out there fighting Conan. So they will have nobody guarding the queen so they can slip in and rescue her. Meanwhile, and I don't want to give too much away because this is out this week from Dark Horse Comics, Conan pulls a pretty clever ruse on the army so he can surround them on all sides and decimate the army as he gets ready to plunder the city. So that's basically your story. Some of the fight scenes I thought could have been a little bit more dramatic. Instead, they were kind of split out over double page spreads, which is fine because, again, the art is pretty cool. And the story is very straightforward. I cannot wait to see how it all concludes. I think next issue is the conclusion of this series. It's Conan the Avenger number 24. I got a big kick out of this, more so than the previous issue. And I'm giving this 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Go check it out. It's Conan the Avenger number 24, out this week from Dark Horse Comics. Matthew Peterson.
Hello. So this week I have a comic book.
Yay.
And a serious case of deja vu. Circuit Breaker number 1 from Image Comics, written by Kevin McCarthy. I think did On the Road. And with art by Kyle Baker, whom I love and have always loved, and whom I picked up this issue for. So, am I good? Can you hear me now?
You picked it up for him?
For him.
He could get his own copy since he's the artist.
Okay. We'll talk later about how prepositions work.
Okay.
But right now, I got to review a comic book set in the future year 20XX.
In the year 20XX.
XX, yes.
That's the same year that Mega Man set.
Right? And that's actually meaningful, I think, because the first line of this issue is, "This isn't Japan." It's actually the part of the world that used to be Japan back when there was a rest of the world.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes, it is a small sanctuary built by robots, protected by robots, in which the surviving members of the human race live and hate robots. This is the point where you all go, excellent.
Sorry, I'm sorry, I came in too early.
You did, on critical hit. But the issue opens on the train with our main character and her friend discussing how the robots are the problem and the robots are bad and the robots are evil. And it is an info dump, but it's done so naturally and so beautifully that you almost don't realize that it was an info dump until there's suddenly a robot spreading sarin gas all over the train.
No, robot.
No. Exactly.
Bad robot.
Bad robot and some bad hat.
All right, J.J. Abrams.
Lens flare. Good.
But at that moment, our heroine, who has pink hair, so you know she's the heroine, because you got to have pink hair. Pink hair is the heroine. Purple hair is the mean one, and blue is the sweet one, if I'm not mistaken.
Magical fighting girls.
Exactly. She leaps from the train and discovers that there are giant robots fighting over the city. Also, she's a robot. And therein lies the crux of our dilemma. She lives in a world where the robots are feared and hated, and she secretly is a robot. And this is really a love story to all of the anime and manga that I, and presumably Kyle Baker, who's the same age as me, grew up reading. There is very clearly an appearance of Astro Boy in a human form, if you pay attention. And the art style is specifically designed to evoke Astro Boy, to evoke Speed Racer, to evoke things whose names escape me that are probably not Astro Boy and Speed Racer. But the, you know, the things that 40-year-old people think of when you think of anime and manga, but it's done in that Kyle Baker style. And there are giant robots who appear in this issue who are just the most beautiful things ever. You want to take them home and not let them anywhere near your house, which is actually how I got married now that I think about it. But the bulk of the issue tells us a little bit about her origins and her life. And there's so many little bits of business throughout this story that are either in jokes or references to something else. The sound effects are all in Japanese and then translated as well. So a woman is angrily sweeping and you see it in Japanese and then you see Bikun underneath, which I think is beautiful. So the sound effects in this issue are, in fact, subtitled.
Hmm.
Yes. It's a really, really fun, really weird story. It's definitely a love letter to Japanese culture as it's viewed through a lens of comic books in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Which I think is lovely. There's some police story in here. There's some giant mecha shogun warriors, gaijin kind of things going on. And I really kind of don't know what to make of this because I like it and it's pleasant and it's fun, but it's not particularly accessible, but that's also kind of the point. As a first issue, it's just this almost overwhelming flow of things that are really neat. And the art is phenomenal. The art is just creepy fun. I'm really kind of sad at how good the art is because Kyle Baker is one of those guys who reminds me of how well I don't draw.
Mm.
Which, you know, if you're a struggling failed artist who never really made it, that may be one of the higher compliments that you can pay, is that I read this and went, man, I wish I could do that. So all in all, though, it's three slices of meatloaf. It's a lot of fun. It's very much a positive experience. I don't know where it's going, which I think is refreshing and neat. But I don't know where it's going, which is also terrifying and maybe just a slight bit alienating. It may be a limited. It may be an ongoing. Either way, I do recommend it. But understand that you're getting into something really wacky and really kind of off the beaten path. And that's going to be fun as long as, you know, it doesn't terrify me somewhere along the line. And again, beautiful, beautiful art from page to page.
Cool. Excellent.
And if you want to learn some three.
All right.
You want to learn some basic babble Japanese, this is a good place to get it. Sumimasen.
Far out, man. All right. Thank you, Matthew. Rodrigo, what do you have for us this week?
I have a video game. Yes. So
see, that's how you do that.
No, good job. Now I'm taking notes. There's this sort of demo. It's called a prototype that you can download for a game called Indivisible. And what Indivisible is kind of an action RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I got it on my PS4. But it is also available on the Xbox One and then also through Steam and maybe a couple other means. It is really interesting. It's a kind of a turn-based RPG, but not entirely. So it's difficult to exactly explain. So imagine that you're playing a turn-based RPG, but everybody's turn is on a cooldown instead of being in a hard order.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what you do, your turn refreshes faster or slower. So it leaves a lot of room for kind of strategy in how you're going to launch your attacks, when you're going to launch them, whether you want to like hold up for like two characters to be able to launch together and kind of combo their attacks, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of where the fun comes from. Also, it is by the same studio who did Skullgirls and some of the same people who worked on Shovel Knight, which is, you know, a big deal, worked on it. So if that means anything to you, you're probably getting excited about this game. It is currently on Indiegogo. The game has funded, so it will come out sometime eventually. But Indiegogo does this thing where you can keep the project open, and they've basically changed some of the tiers. So you can essentially keep funding this game indefinitely. And for example, one of the current tiers is they will do full voiceover for all the major characters, or you know, if they get to like $2,300,000, they'll do multiple endings plus extra dungeons and stuff.
Cool.
So that stuff is all still available. The game itself, or rather the art for the game, is really great. I really like it. Again, if you're familiar with Skullgirls, it has that same kind of character design, although it's maybe a little bit more under control. What's nice, if you go to their Indiegogo page, which is, you know, you go to Indiegogo, then Projects, then Indivisible RPG. This is a game that's based on kind of multiple cultures. There's some Indian stuff, there's some Arabic stuff, there's some Mesoamerican stuff, there's some Native American stuff, African stuff, etc. And there are actually a lot of characters of color, a lot of female characters, and the protagonist is actually a female character of color, which is not something that you get in a lot of RPGs. Even it seems RPGs that come from Japan frequently have a white boy as a protagonist, so that's nice. This game is pretty interesting. It blends that kind of 2D platformer and turn-based RPG stuff pretty seamlessly, at least in the demo. And they basically talk a lot in the Indiegogo page about blending those two together and about how their engine accomplishes that. So again, if you're interested in game engines, for example, you can check that out, and they'll talk about, you know, adapting the Skullgirls stuff to it. Altogether, playing the demo was a lot of fun. There's a lot going on. It's pretty fast paced. I played through it and it wasn't too easy and it wasn't too hard. You know, I basically died once trying to get all the way through it until I figured out, you know, a good trick for staying alive.
Up, up, down, down, left, right.
Kind of, actually, because the way that it works is you end up with four characters, and each of those characters is mapped to one of the buttons, right? If you think of like your standard video game controller, there's four buttons on the face. And then, so you can have each of them attack, and then if you press up or down plus that button, they will do either a standard attack if you're not pressing in a direction, or an up attack, which usually targets multiple enemies, or a down attack, which has some other effect. So you can actually sit there and just like, you know, go, oh, I want to do up triangle against this one, and then just standard X for that guy, and then down square for that other guy, or whatever you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually allows for a lot, pretty complex gameplay, even just in the demo. The downside of that is that you're like, at least I was like very intently watching the gauges as they refilled. Mm-hmm. So all this wonderful, lavish animation was frequently lost on me because you have to watch those so closely and you have to press buttons when it happens. So I'm like, I'm sure somewhere in the corner of my eye, one of these characters is performing an awesome attack that I told it to perform.
Yeah.
But I'm not seeing it because I'm waiting for the next gauge to fill up. Is there a way to fix that? I don't know. Maybe the only way to do it is for you to play enough and get comfortable enough that then I don't have to watch the gauges so closely.
There you go.
Really love the design on it. I'll give it 4 slices of meatloaf. I really recommend that people download it. And if you've got some money burning a hole in your pocket, the Indiegogo rewards are pretty nice. Basically, you can still get some backer perks even though the game has already funded.
Cool. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for that, Rodrigo. And Ashley, you've got a Marvel comic for us.
I do. I have the the wonderful, all new, all different, all now taking place in the sewers, all bad guy now, Silk, written by Robbie Thompson with art by Stacey Lee, who carried over from the first Silk series because Silk's been around for like less than a year and already has 2 number ones. Right. Isn't that cool? Go yeah. Marvel Events.
Wow.
the thing about the fact that Secret War has finally, or Secret Wars or whatever, is finally over is that everyone's got to be different now. And so Silk is a bad guy and she is working for Black Cat.
Hmm.
And issue 6 is kind of the summation of everything that's been happening in this first arc with her. She's been fighting an underground group called the Goblin Nation, who follow a dude called the Goblin King, who turns out to be an icky white guy in a goblin mask. I feel like there's some patriarchy imagery going on there. And you also get to understand a little bit more about how Silk is dealing, or rather not dealing, with her personal life. Something that I think makes Silk really interesting is that she really is basically girl Spider-Man, but mm-hmm. she's not in a different universe in the way that Spider-Gwen is. So I think Robbie Thompson kind of has to go more out of his way to make her different and unique and engaging. And she is currently working for J. Jonah Jameson, but he really likes her because of the whole stuck in a bunker, don't get references, don't go on my phone thing. Mm-hmm. So he calls her Analog. And you get to see him having a very like soft, humanizing moment with her where he's like, hey, I've been worried about you. Are you okay? And she's like, I'm just really tired because I was in the sewers for a long time. So it does a really good job at bringing you the classic Spider-Man-esque adventures and the heart of gold that you expect from like a Peter Parker story. But it does it with familiar characters with an interesting twist.
Right.
I think this is a great ultimate issue to end off the storyline. It's a lot of fun. There's a giant fight. Stacey Lee's art is like reading a Disney cartoon or like Disney storyboards. It's so soft and beautiful, but it really, really works for this character even when she's being really badass and getting like down and dirty with the Goblin King in the sewers. Like, it's still beautiful, but you're like, this is really gross and intense. Silk is a character that I didn't think would work. I really, really like her. And this issue for me epitomizes the kind of stories that you should tell with her and what makes her different than characters like Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and even Spider-Gwen, who has the exact same number of issues because she was created at the same time. So I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 slices of the meatloaf.
Excellent. Definitely worth checking out.
Heck yes.
And so this whole arc...
Five first.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this whole arc up to the same level as this final issue?
Definitely. But
right,
this has
I may go check it out.
The added fun of being the big battle at the end.
Excellent. Very cool. Thank you, Ashley, for that. And listeners, you can head over to MajorSpoilers.com for even more reviews and news and all sorts of things, including the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Poll of the Week, 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 week.
The best polls of the week are those that are sent in by you, the listener, to podcast at MajorSpoilers.com. Someone wants to know who's the best sword wheeler or wielder, not a wheeler. Could be a sword wheel, I suppose.
Sword wheeler, yeah. Sword wheeler.
Yeah.
He was the red-haired kid from Captain Planet. Sword wheeler? He had the fire wheeler. Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Connor McCloud of the Clan McCloud?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Slade Wilson Deathstroke? Who is the best sword wielder? Matthew Peterson.
Yes. Matthew Peterson is the best sword
I think
wielder.
It'd be like Matthew's chopped up into a million slices while his hand's still trying to get the sword out of the
sheath. But the joke would be on Connor McCloud, because now like 1,000 issues of comics would be clogging his brain.
Incorrect.
No, this madness. So Matthew, who would win? Who's the better one?
Well, my heart says that the best swordsman is Sekar of Atasokichi, Lord Baron, and Absentia of Oblia. But since that's an in-joke from another one of our podcasts, I'm going to go with whatever means Slade Wilson's head is cut off. So the other swordsman could literally be, I don't know, Hong Kong Fui.
Well, you've only got two choices here. So
right.
Pick
but
one.
This is the thing. I'm not voting for anyone. I'm voting against Slade Wilson.
So you're voting for Connor McCloud.
Connor McLeod. Whatever. Yeah. Did
Rodrigo,
I mention I've only seen the one Highlander? I don't
that's
know.
That's the only one that matters.
You don't need to see. Yeah, you don't need to see.
So oh, that's okay.
You don't even have to watch the TV series. Highlander is the only movie that matters.
Not true. I did see the one with Edge in it.
The movie Highlander is the only one that matters. Rodrigo, who is the better sword wielder?
Well, it really just has to be Connor McCloud, right? I mean, so in the DC universe, Deathstroke is a big deal because he, much like your Batman, he is a normal person who is just really good at stabbing people or shooting people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's only lived a single human lifetime, so he's only perfected it as much, possibly, even if he's the peak of human swordsmanship, he only has a single lifetime to perfect it. Connor McCloud has lived multiple lifetimes, and on top of that, anytime he chops off anybody's head off, well, not anybody, but some other mythical swordsman's head off, he is then able to absorb their abilities. Now, granted, maybe it's not great that he gets to absorb the people that he beats, because potentially that wouldn't allow him to improve that much, but, you know, he probably picks up a couple of tricks. It's like, oh, I would have never thought to do that. Also, oh, now I can speak Japanese.
But that's not anybody. That's only other.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Whatever they're called.
Right, only other immortals.
Yeah,
but here's the deal. Other immortals know that the only way to get this is by becoming kick-ass swordsmen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other immortals have also been around longer than Connor McCloud. So any older immortal whose head he chops also comes with multiple lifetimes, like even more lifetimes of sword training.
Yeah.
So I'd go with Connor McCloud.
Ashley, what about you?
Well, I don't know who that first guy is, so I guess I'm going to say Deathstroke, because he's real scary, and you didn't put Aragorn, son of Arathorn, as a potential option
here. Nope, and it's not. Hey, don't look at me. This is sent in from one of our listeners. Blame our listeners.
I am.
Listeners. History lesson.
Yeah, really. Highlander is one of those 80 movies that are so 80s. It's got an awesome Queen soundtrack. It's got.
I mean, if you like Queen, I guess.
It's got what's his name in it? It's got
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery in it.
But the guy that's playing the Kurgan.
That's racist.
Clancy Brown.
Plays the Kurgan, the enemy in this. And it's got a little romance, a little space-time
kind of stuff
going on.
A little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
It's definitely an interesting movie if you like some sword fighting movie. I went with Connor McCloud as well because, again,
Deathstroke sucks.
If you're going to kill somebody, if you're going to take
their
head.
You mean Deadpool. Deadpool sucks.
if you're gonna kill somebody, you have to wield the sword. And
right.
I think of all the centuries that he's been doing it, I think he's probably better. Even if he just still uses the one sword, I think he would win.
I think there should be some kick butt Australian immortal who like disembowels people with a boomerang. That can be only one. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, The risk of getting into Highlander is that you have to start watching stuff besides the original Highlander.
No, you don't.
But that's what I'm saying is, you know, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if he met, like, you know, a guy from a different country? Like, he does. He meets, or rather, his nephew or whatever meets him in the series. Yeah.
His cousin uncle.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like that stuff would be cool, but it exposes you to other Highlander stuff, unfortunately. Yeah.
And although the series did try to expand the mythology, it also made it very convoluted as well.
Oh, man. Did you guys ever see the Highlander cartoon?
Yes.
No.
Where it's like,
I hated that thing.
God, it was so bad. It's like this little teenage redheaded guy, and he's like, you know, I don't know, Bronson McCloud.
And, Jimmy McCloud.
Yeah.
Chasing scum around the. No, that's James Bond Jr. My bad.
Yeah. But it's basically the same deal. It's this like super watered down version to the point where the quickening happens when you like touch swords with other people. So he's like going around.
There are undertones in that statement.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say,
he's going around not decapitating people.
Right, because you can't do that.
Because you can't do that in a kid's TV show. It is a mess. It is a mess. He has a sidekick that is like, it kind of looks like a Burbell from Thundercats.
Snarf, snarf. You can be only one snarf, snarf.
Chris says that he wants to go with a Highlander. Rusty Cat says he would go with Slade Wilson. Brenning Dragonbread says Connor, but he says that Slade would definitely give Connor a fight for the ages. Oh man, so many good conversations. So many good conversations going on over there in the comments section. But right now, Matthew, how does the voting stand?
The voting at this moment, if I'm looking at it correctly, I didn't close it this week, but I'm now going to refresh it while I vamp. 76 votes in the bag, 54%, very, very close race. Connor McCloud of Clan McCloud, 46% voting wrong.
Oh, Matthew, come on now.
I will say this was a good one because there was an obvious matchup here, right? Is like who's a better Deathstroke or that other guy?
Deathstroke or the Deathstroke.
Yeah, and this I like this. I like that they just kind of went laterally with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is kind of neat.
Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com, cast your vote in the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week. While you're over there, you might want to check out that little ad on the side for tweakedaudio.com and then click on it and then head over to tweakedaudio.com and check out all their earbuds. My wife finally got her pair.
Because if somebody cuts off your head,
well,
it might slice your earbud cable.
No. Actually, you would want to have the Tweaked Audio earbuds because it might just keep your head attached to your body. And you'd be able to live a little bit longer. So many different styles, so many different colors. I'm not saying that these are sword proof, but they are engineered for durability.
Multiple colors, so there doesn't have to be only one.
See, I do laugh at your jokes. Best of all, when you head over to tweakedaudio.com, use the checkout code MAJOR. And save 33% off the price. Thank you, Tweaked Audio, for supporting this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast.
Quickening.
Exactly. Yes, do it. Do it quickly.
Quickening.
Yes. Quickeningly. all right.
Sean Connery approved.
Oh yeah, you're right. Ashley, you're right. Totally racist.
Rivers. Sorry. What?
Sean Connery's not the Spaniard.
Sean Connery is the Spaniard.
No.
Yes.
This week.
Sean Connery plays Ramirez.
Yes.
Who comes from a part of Spain, which is very near Dublin.
Which must be very near Dublin, yes.
Right. It's just, you remember that movie, The Hunt for Red October, where all the German people were, Russian people came from just outside of Edinburgh. That's the same thing.
Yeah. This week, we are taking a look at the trade paperback, Rivers of London Bodywork. Now, this is the first volume of a series that Titan Comics is publishing over in the UK, and it's also here in the US. Mm-hmm. It is based on the book series, Rivers of London, which, Ashley, what's going on in this world what is going on in this world?
So, like any good Dresden Files story, there's a guy.
And
it's usually a guy.
Starting out with a punch to the gut.
In Witchblade, it's a girl.
There can be only one.
works for the police, and I don't remember his name. That's how much impact it had.
Yeah.
But he's a character of color, so that was a plus.
Peter Grant.
Peter Grant. And Peter Grant is the only police officer in all of Police Officer Britain who knows that there are magic-y things. And he has a lady friend who goes into the water and looks at the body and says, there's some magic-y stuff. You should come check it out. And that is basically your inciting incident, the first 5 pages.
She is actually the daughter of the goddess of the River Thames. So.
Which I think was kind of the coolest thing about the whole book, if I'm going to be honest.
Kind of is. There are a lot of people of color in here, and there's a lot. They do mix it up very naturally and don't try to call attention to itself, which is super, super nice.
Mm-hmm.
But Matthew, Ashley's right. This, to me, felt very much like, as I read this, oh, this is Dresden Files, but for UK folk.
Well, luckily for me, I've never read Dresden Files, but...
Have you ever watched the TV show?
You know what it felt like to me.
It's about Detective Lance.
It felt an awful lot like a Hellblazer-type story, which, not necessarily a bad thing. What it really tried to do was give me a perfectly normal, natural world like the one outside my window that also has secret magic in the shadows. And that's always something that you can work with, you can play with.
It is interesting because Peter Grant does work with someone else who I guess is part of the police force or not part of the police force. That was a little confusing to me.
He's the chief inspector.
Okay, he's the chief inspector of all things non-muggly.
Yes, and his name is Nightingale.
And together they go and, it's like... We don't talk about it, but like the other police officers, the quote unquote normal police officers are like, we don't want to talk about it, but we know it exists. And it's almost like, let's not talk about it because it messes with our worldviews. I don't know.
Well, the same thing happened in, is it L.A. Confidential with Guy Pearce and
there is a movie that
square-headed guy.
Yes.
But yeah, it's kind of that same thing. It did not have magic in it, but you know what it did have? It had a police force that kept important secrets and kept things away from the normal people so that the normal people would think that the police were in control and everything was fine.
In this case, the stuff they're trying to keep people away from is a haunted car, Rodrigo. How scary is that, where you look through the windshield and you're looking into the past or you're seeing something you don't want to see and the car makes you kill people or kill you in return?
Yeah, I definitely thought the windshield stuff was some of the stronger imagery in this. And you actually see it come up a few times and they do it differently every time. So I was definitely into that. Mm-hmm. You know, they set it up with like a more tame haunted car.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like...
A car that has been stripped down of its parts and then put into other cars, so you have a floating army of haunted cars.
Yeah.
It can possess various haunted cars. Like that one episode of The Simpsons where Homer got the haunted hairpiece.
Yeah.
Yes!
It's exactly like that, except instead of a hell toupee, it's, a haunted air filter.
or a windscreen or a boot or anything like that.
It reminded me of Christine.
Yes,
multiple times.
Mm-hmm. And those parallels were intentional. And if you look at the main cover of the trade paperback, is actually an intentional riff on the first Christine novel cover from 1980.
Was it 80? I was going to say 70, but maybe you're right.
I think 80. It may have been 79. I don't know.
Okay.
I was eight.
Here's the so eventually they find out what the magic-y is and they stop the magic for now or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan of this story for several reasons. First of all, it jumps around and it makes connections, very loose connections on how they solve this. And then some of the connections don't even seem like connections. It's just like, oh, I've got a haunted car. Therefore, we know all about this other haunted car because that's how haunted cars work. The end.
I mean, they're all in that one Facebook group.
Right. The haunted cars. They all went to high school together.
I guess. I don't know. I just thought that the storytelling was choppy and disjointed.
I think that was by design, though, because in the first couple of issues, there's intentional time hopping where we see what Nightingale is up to at the same time Peter is fighting off the first demon mobile. But I agree with you that the choppy was too choppy, but I feel like it was one of those times where they were trying to do something super literate and weird and, you know, wobbly like the last season of How I Met Your Mother that all takes place in a 48-hour period.
But that's a good point, and I think that's actually one of the problems that they run into is that they actually try a couple or, you know, a handful of different kind of storytelling techniques, but they're not consistent. So if the whole book was always, here's what this person is doing, now let's see what the other person is doing, and that brings us back to now, and you hear that same dialogue, when that is executed well, like, say, in a particularly good episode of How I Met Your Mother, then you're like, ah, that's great. That's, like, suddenly that same line of dialogue takes on a double meaning, or is that much more impactful, or whatever. And I felt a lot of the time those techniques in this book were just done for the sake of, you know, just kind of keeping it interesting. And, they just didn't have that same, like, thematic punch that you would hope if somebody executes a weird literary technique.
Ashley, do you follow along that same track, or do you have a different opinion on the disjointedness?
I didn't think about it that much because about 10 pages in, I was like, oh, this is less fun Dresden Files. And yeah. I kind of made up my mind from that. But I did go to the internet search engines and I did learn that this is actually adapted. So,
oh, it is. Okay.
From a series of novels that sold over 1 million copies.
Right.
Written by a dude what wrote Sylvester McCoy's Doctor. So I wonder if perhaps in the translation from prose to comics, where you're basically taking all of your words away and replacing them with pictures, I wonder if that, you know, the idea of that was lost in translation. Like, maybe it's better in novel form.
It may
and
be,
I'm willing to go with it, but it's like, it would be a tough book to get excited about.
Yeah, the other thing is that this is also now I think it's an ongoing series or a series of miniseries, very much like the Dresden Files comic book over at Dynamite Entertainment. But I don't know if it's this one or the next one's actually set in between two of the books that have been released. Yeah, so and that brings me to my other problem with this is you are expected to know who all of these people are. And what their backstories are, because there's a lot of in-jokey stuff, like with the Red Mist, the maid, who, if, you know, it's like, oh, the mechanic is kind of interested in her and goes inside, and they're like, should we go in and get him? He's like, oh, no, he'll find out. It's like, what? What is it about this woman? We don't know anything about her. Apparently, if you read the books, you know everything about her. So there is a lot of, we expect you to kind of know this to get the most impact out of it problem with this book or with this trade. Yes, no?
Yes.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
I can see it, although I don't know that it was as big a stumbling block for me because it's honestly, when I come into something, really anything that I've never read before, the question is not so much, can I figure out who these people are? Does it feel like it's worth figuring out who these people are? And in this case, from the, you know, the very beginning when he started explaining who he was and what he did, I felt like there was enough to Peter and his narration to make me want to know, well, who is this mysterious Nightingale? What is this stuff all about? So I feel like at the very least they were able to draw me past that question of, you know, I'm not a fan of the source material. Can this apply to me? Can this, you know, appeal to me? And I think they did a pretty good job of that. I mean, I read all the way through this, and I didn't have any moments where I went, oh, God, another 200 pages. Oh.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's even 200 pages. I think
it's 160 pages.
But that's not the point. When we do a trade paperback, especially a trade paperback of something that has a following somewhere else, be it a second volume of an existing book or something that's adapted from a movie or a series that I either don't or in some cases won't watch – there's that question of, does it really drag for me? And while this was something where a lot of questions still remain unanswered afterwards, it didn't drag necessarily. It didn't pull me down and say, oh, my God, this is so boring. At least there was some, you know, there was some pep in their step when they were telling the story.
Ashley, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to respectfully disagree. I think that the idea of like your urban fantasy detective, like that's a trope and that's a theme that we see throughout because there is something to that. I do think Peter is an interesting character, but I kept circling back to like, man, I really wish I was reading the prose book because it feels, it felt kind of segmented, I guess, in a weird way.
I just really wanted to find out a little bit more about these characters because as soon as I got onto like the second page and it's like, okay, they're not explaining who any of these people are, even through casual inference. I was just like, okay, so I'm missing something here. And there's something just on the surface that I want to pick at, but I can't because it's not there. And so I really felt that not being enveloped into the world, I felt left out. And I felt like, why am I felt not that I wasn't interested in reading this because I did want to get to the end of it. But a lot of it was like, wow, I'm that new kid that no one wants to be friends with. And that's how this book is treating me. And so for me, it just, I don't know, just didn't work. It just didn't work. What did work for you, Rodrigo? Were there things that worked for you in this book besides the magic windshield?
Yeah. I like that there's a cute dog in it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
I liked the it was this all along. I thought, you know, it is. And like, here's the thing. This is a British version of a lot of stuff that we've seen set in the United States, right? Your paranormal investigation stuff. And maybe outside of New England, we don't get a lot of like, oh, this is like the horrible things that the Puritans did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot to that. And it's interesting. And it was an angle that I wasn't expecting. So I like that. The time and kind of disjointed path that we took to get there, not so much, but I did like the this is what was happening.
I did like all the characters. I mean, they all seemed very fascinating. There's some BBC series that I've accidentally stumbled into a couple of times where it's like, oh, here are all these characters that are very full and rich and they seem all very cool and interesting. And I want to know more about them, but suddenly I'm in episode 6 and I'll be gone for 3 weeks, so right. I probably won't. I kind of felt this way about it. That being said, at the end of the book, there are these little short one-page stories or couple-page stories that I thought did better at giving us the background of the characters than the main story did.
Those were wonderful.
Yeah.
I will tell you what my favorite part of this series, this collection is.
Okay.
And it is an extremely important one. Much as when I read an X-Files comic, does it look like Gillian Anderson? A key point in this book was, oh no, these BMWs are haunted. The cars look phenomenal.
Yeah.
They do.
When your plot point is this specific real world car that exists is part of the issue, like there's an antique Bentley.
Yeah, and all these other BMWs,
all the Beamers, and you're like, okay, those looked amazing. And they really delivered on that. And they delivered, I think, on a feel of a city that I've never been to, but I've seen a lot of episodes of Doctor Who. And so I feel like just that the fact that those cars were recognizably those cars, even if it meant that maybe BMW paid them for this story, I don't know.
Is BMW a British company?
No, German.
German.
Bavarian. Okay. Yeah. The B stands for Bavaria.
Gotcha.
I think.
They used to make planes. That's what the symbol is.
Yeah, that's what the symbol is. Propeller against a blue sky.
Yep.
Yeah. But I really, really appreciated the fact that the art team not only gave us some interesting heads, they gave us lifelike, realistic cars that work.
Yeah, no, I like the art. I like the characters. The story, if I was more familiar with these guys, I would probably be more interested in this. But bottom line for me is, it's an okay story. I just feel like it's too disjointed for me, and I'm not familiar enough with the world to get into it. So for me, this is a check it out from the library. Rodrigo, what are your final thoughts on this book?
Probably my main thought is that I found it interesting that everybody was kind of like, they were like, this is just like, and then kind of said something different. Because for me, I was like, this is just like Men in Black. Older white guy is like teaming up with a younger black guy, teaching him the ropes about talking to river spirits, basically. But altogether, it's like, there's some interesting points of light in this, but it's kind of a jumble to get through it. It kind of felt like there were too many characters sometimes, that too many things to keep track of for kind of so-so payoff. So for me, you know, it's like I didn't hate it, but I'm not particularly itching to pick up the next volume.
Okay. Matthew.
I am actually kind of interested in picking up the next volume. I would say that it's always a crapshoot when we pick a trade paperback with which I'm unfamiliar, simply because there is that question of accessibility. And I feel like this book was successful for me, not necessarily for everyone on the panel. Take that for what it's worth. I'm kind of a weirdo. But it was successful for me. It was artistically solid in terms of the drawings. It was solid in terms of the characterizations. And I think that the fact that we all related it to something that we're familiar with and kind of sort of liked says something about the nature of the work, whether that be that it's intentionally tropey and thus maybe a little bit more inviting, or maybe it's too tropey and a little off-putting. But for me, I feel like it really worked in pulling me into this world. It's not like I'm now going to go out and immediately seek the books, but you know what? I'm sure that my friend Sarah has a copy. I can borrow hers. So,
well, does this encourage me to go out and look for the book? I'm more interested in finding the book than reading the next
article. I will agree with Ashley 100% on that. Reading this book was more successful for me, but I really would like to read it in prose and see how it rolls and whether all of the positive stuff here kind of links better in, you know, 600 or 800 pages than it does in the collaboration of pictures and words. Mm-hmm. So.
Ashley, you get the final say this week.
Well, I'm just going to agree with you. I think if you're a fan of the property already, I think that this is probably right up your alley. Like when we read Doctor Who comics, we go on with a certain amount of knowledge that I think skews our view of that. And I think if you know the source material, there's probably a lot here going on. It looks pretty good. So if you can get it from the library, I think it's definitely worth like checking out, even if it's just to look at the art. But otherwise, you know, there's Men in Black comics, there's X-Files comics, there's Dresden Files comics, and I think they all do the translation a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for that. Ashley, where can people find out more about you and what you're up to and all those cool things?
You can find me on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. I also co-host Geek History Lesson podcast with Jason Inman that you can find here on majorspoilers.com. And you can also find my latest Girl on Supergirl review of the Supergirl Flash crossover, and the companion Easter eggs are featured on the DC fan channel this week.
Excellent. Matthew, what about you?
Well, if you want to know more about me, check out the restroom stalls in Topeka, Kansas. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. I'm also Mighty King Cobra on the Tumblr. Don't know what I'm doing there, but it's kind of fun. And occasionally Rodrigo is evil and says something about Dexy's Midnight Runners, which is why I'm not speaking to him this week. So that's fun.
And Rodrigo.
Come on, Eileen Talura. At Fearsome Critter on Twitter. Buy my book.
There you go. Definitely buy his book. He has rent to pay.
I bought two.
And you can find me at Major Spoilers. And, of course, check out everything at majorspoilers.com, our complete podcast of our complete listing of podcasts that we have out there. And if you like this show and you want to see it continue, head over to members.majorspoilers.com for as little as $2 a month. You can support all of our efforts to do cool things. And if you want to support a little bit more, there's more rewards for you on that front as well. So head over to members.majorspoilers.com. to learn more. That wraps it up for this issue. Thank you so much for listening, being part of the Major Spoilers experience. Next week, there's one of two things going to happen. Either it's an interview or a Q&A, but regardless, we'll talk with you then, because we know that you love comics and we do too. We'll see you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel.
podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.